Sri Vishnu Sahasranam, name 761, is Satya Medhaha. Those of you who have been watching regularly recently will know that Medha means intelligence. We just recently had the name Sumedha, one of good intelligence. And Satya, of course, is a very well-known word, which corresponds, or rather the word in English, truth, corresponds to the word satya. And whether you say it in English or whether you say it in Sanskrit or whatever language you say, it's one of those words which is hard to define. In fact, we could say that the whole Vedic literature is meant to define, as far as we can, the truth. We have in English the truth with T, capital T, in the first T in truth with a capital T, to distinguish it from relative truths. It is true that I am now situated in a village near Vellore in Tamil Nadu. So that's true. But I, referring to this body, that's not fully true. It's only a temporary truth. And Vellore is just, well, it's a place which has existed for some time, and after some time it won't exist, and Tamil Nadu won't exist, and even the land may exist, but as it's had previous names previously, it'll have other names in future. And India, that name didn't exist previously, and the land didn't exist. Everything is temporary. The absolute truth is the substratum of everything. And thus we have important terms and concepts and facts about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which are featured in Vishnu Sahasranam, such as Adha, the substratum of everything. So Satya, Satya Medha means truth. Satya means truth, Medha means intelligence. So it means one whose intelligence, this refers to Vishnu, one whose intelligence is true, one whose intelligence moves in the truth, as distinguished from mundane intelligence. There are so many intelligent people in this world, have been, are, and will be. But their intelligence, most of them, their intelligence doesn't move in the truth. Someone is considered intelligent if he has a good grasp on the truth or some aspect of the truth. Of course, someone can be intelligent and use it for tricking others. A con man can be very intelligent. But people who are revered for their intelligence, it's because their intelligence works in a way to disclose the truth. In the last name I discussed in this regard, Sumedha, of good intelligence, I mentioned the name. If we're going to talk about intelligence and intelligent people in this world, in this present time, place, and circumstance, the planet Earth in the still relatively early 21st century, we're going to talk about Albert Einstein, who is revered for his intelligence. No doubt there are many other people of the 20th century who had intelligence, good intelligence, politicians. Winston Churchill, for instance, had good intelligence. He was a very intelligent person. But he's not revered in the same way that Einstein is, because Einstein's intelligence worked to disclose the truth about the material world. And the progress in understanding the material world by the scientific system has become so developed and so advanced and so inscrutable to most people, and in fact to most scientists also, because not many scientists can go very deeply into levels of understanding of things that Einstein first uncovered. And even if, and I'm repeating myself, things I said in the previous talks, naturally. So even things that certain scientists may go very deeply into, but some area they may go into, but they may not be aware of other areas. They're unlikely they will be aware of other areas. Just like if someone is very deeply into string theory, for instance, or the opposition to string theory. Yes, there's politics in science also. But they may not be very much knowledgeable about the details of various nuances of theories of biological evolution, because just science is so advanced. So the whole monolith or megalith or whatever you want to call it of science is so advanced, so much more than that one person's intelligence can grasp, and seems to explain things in such a convincing way that for some people it seems that this is it. This material world, this is it. Science is explaining it. This must be the truth. There is nothing beyond this. Some people come to that conclusion. I came across a quote by Werner Heisenberg, who was one not nearly as famous as Einstein, but definitely very famous if one at all studies the history of science. So he was one of the very, very great physicists. And he was a Christian throughout his life, and he said that the first sip from the cup of science, you get a taste of atheism, but when you get to the bottom of the cup, you find God. Interesting quote. Anyway, satya, what is satya? Satya medha. It appears that scientists are uncovering truth because they're uncovering facts about this world. And a lot of it is very theoretical, and which is not really facts at all, but often it's seen that what is theoretical in science later becomes accepted as a fact. For instance, the existence of atoms, one of the things that Einstein proved, the existence of atoms. Do atoms really exist? It was a theory and people weren't sure. Some things may be impossible ever to prove, just like Big Bang theory or string theory. It appears impossible to prove it. But you never know, there could be breakthroughs. But whatever breakthroughs are there, still we're like frogs in a well. We're limited, our intelligence is limited. So to fully understand the truth, that is not possible for us by our own speculative methods or even are group speculative methods. Science can be considered a group speculation which does have processes of verification, but the verification leads to further speculation, and speculation is the cutting edge of science. First one learns, and then if one goes on to be a very big scientist, then he becomes qualified to speculate. But speculation, speculation is the task of the biggest scientists. They look a bit further. They look at what we already know. We always use the word "we" to signify the human race, although only a tiny percentage know about all these things. So they look at what we know and what is verified, and then take it, and then they see the known, and then they look to the unknown, and they speculate on that. And most speculations don't go very far. Some of them do. Someone may spend his whole life pursuing a certain speculation, trying to verify it, and come to the conclusion that it can't be verified. It's not a fact. You can spend your whole life like that. But the very fact that science is concerned with speculation, which in science is not, in our Hare Krishna terminology, speculation is generally not a very good word, but in science it's not a bad word. It's considered you're qualified to speculate when you know a hell of a lot, when you have a license to speculate. The speculations of established scientists tend to be taken seriously, and of course they don't just waffle off some speculations, but they have to give some kind of intellectual structure to it so that it can be at least considered by others also. But the very fact that science is concerned with speculation means that it's always outside the truth. At best, it's at the periphery of the truth, but it can never reach to the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. It's not imaginable in human speculation that we can ever come to a stage where we can say that we know clearly everything about everything. There was at some point a hopeful idea of having a unified, in science, of having a unified theory of everything, but that seems to have died away, that idea. Satyamedha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose intelligence knows everything, sees everything clearly. This is to know him as Satyamedha means to accept that the universe is not going on by God playing dice, as Einstein famously said, that there is someone who knows what's going on. We may not know what's going on. We may never know what's going on, but there is someone who knows what's going on, and it's not just a blind dice game. There is in science also the understanding that there some things are so random that by their nature they're random, and you can't fully define them. You can't fully predict anything. Now, I shouldn't pretend that I know more than I do, because I really don't know much about science, really just at the very, very much the periphery of it. But I was just looking the other day at, the day before, Brownian motion, which predicts that things are unpredictable. That's one of the effects of it. Our friend Richard Dawkins thinks that because there was a big bang and things exploded in a certain way, that there is rigid determinism. Things are going on in an absolutely fixed way, and there's nothing we can do about it. We just have an illusion of free will. But such an idea is not even upheld by science itself. Of course, scientists like other kinds of philosophers would argue about that. Anyway, the point is that he who has the intelligence which transcends human intelligence, and it transcends human intelligence to the extent that human intelligence, we don't even want to accept it, that there is someone who knows everything, who's got a full grasp of how it's only in control of everything, but he has a full grasp of how everything works and sets up the systems and doesn't scratch his head and have to use a supercomputer to do it. Parasya shakti vividhaiva shuyate swabhavaki jnana balakriyacha. Shvetashvatara Upanishad states, natasya karyam karanamcha vidyate natatsamaschabhyadikascha drishyate. Parasya shakti vividhaiva shruyate swabhavaki jnana balakriyacha. This is perfect theism. He, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is not obliged to do anything. He's not forced to do anything. He's not anywhere under anyone's control. He has no work to do. There's no one equal to him. There's no one greater than him. He oversees everything, but even though everything is going on in all the multiverses, the multiverse concept is there in the Vedic understanding, long, long before string theory and all this kind of thing. So he doesn't do anything, but everything is done by him. Whoops, wait a minute. Isn't that just a bit of wordplay? No, because everything is effected automatically by his energies, among which jnana, he knows everything. He has unlimited energies by which everything is done. It's automatically done. But still they're under his control. And still he doesn't have to exert himself. Jnana and his energy of knowledge, his energy of power, and his energy of action. These are three major energies which are listed here in Shvetashvatara Upanishad. Satya, he is himself the truth. He is the ultimate truth. Krishnat Param, what is that? Krishnat Param Kimapi Tattvamaham Najane, the great impersonalist. Madhusudan Saraswati. It's very unusual, hard to understand, because he very strongly preaches Advaita philosophy, but then he has a very devotional side also. Krishnat Param Kimapi Tattvamaham Najane. He said, I don't know any truth higher than Krishna. So truth means seeing everything clearly and himself being the ultimate truth. Just like I started off saying, there is a truth, relative truth. Everything we say in this world is a relative truth. I am in a village near Vellore in Tamil Nadu, all relative, but it means it's relative to something else. I, referring to this body, which I'm not this body anyway, I can be identified as this body because it's different to another body. But all the other different bodies that we see in the world at this time, they're all so temporary, but the absolute truth, that which is eternal, everything is eternally in relation to that one unchanging truth, who is Krishna. So he is the absolute truth. Everything else changes. Everything is relative to everything else. But how does that work? Then you can't ascertain anything to be true, because I say, okay, fact or a perceived fact, A, can only be understood in relation to perceived fact B. And then actually it's not so easy, because everything is so much interrelated with everything else. But then fact A is relative to fact B, then fact B is relative to something else, and it's all in the huge pattern of the universe. Everything is relative to everything else, and everything is changing. So what is it that everything is ultimately related to or dependent upon, or whose existence exists? What is the basis of it all, of all this existence? The unchanging fact, the Sanatan Satya, the eternal truth, that is Krishna. And his intelligence is the intelligence of he who is the ultimate truth. So this name is very important for us to know, so that we can also become Satyamedha. Not to the extent that, not that we become God, but that our intelligence becomes fixed in the truth, in understanding things as they are. Srila Prabhupada sometimes said Krishna consciousness means understanding things as they are. In a purport to the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada states that, is it in a purport? He interweaves it with the translation in the fourth canto, that Krishna consciousness means seeing the universe as Krishna sees it. Not to the extent that Krishna sees it, but with the understanding that Krishna sees it. And not from Krishna's vantage point, from our vantage point. Not that we'll see everything completely as he does. Sarvatokshi, his eyes are everywhere. But we don't have that. But it means to understand things. Just like the fact is, Krishna is the supreme. We are his eternal servants. Everything in this mature world is temporary. Krishna knows that. That's a fact. That's truth. If we understand that, then we are also Satyamedha. So this term Satya, we have already in Vishnu Sahasranam, we've been through the names Satya, Satya Parakrama. Just the name Satya is a name of Vishnu. Satya Parakrama, his valor is true. Satya Dharma Parakrama, his valor for upholding dharma is true. Satya Sandha, of truthful resolution. Satya Dharma, a name to come, Satya Dharma Parayanaha. Clearly, Satya is a major feature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Something that we very much need to know, because we are in the world of Asatya, which is sometimes misunderstood to mean that it doesn't exist, but rather that we misunderstand it. Just like if one sees a rope and misunderstands it to be a snake, which is quite possible in the twilight, that doesn't mean that the rope doesn't exist, but that our perception of it is not true. Or actually, the much more commonly used example in discussion of Vedic philosophy is to see an oyster shell and to think that it has silver on it, or it's actually not silver. But we mistake it. So mistaken perception. We are in the world of mistaken perception. Due to mistaken perception, we identify ourselves as human. When we have a cat body, we mistake ourselves to be a cat. We mistake this world to be the place for our enjoyment. Everything's a big mistake, but we have to come to the platform of truth. Truth is Krishna. So it's a major point of the Vedic knowledge. Veda means knowledge. So Veda, knowledge, and Satya, they're obviously practically synonyms, but just from slightly different perception. In the Taittiriya Upanishad, Satyam Jnanam Ananta Brahma. Brahma is that which is Satya, truth, Jnana, knowledge, Ananta, unlimited, eternal. That is one definition of Brahma, the absolute truth. We have the term Satyam, Shivam, Sundaram, the absolute truth. Krishna is Satyam, truth, Shiva, all good, all auspicious, Sundara, beautiful. In the Chandogya Upanishad, in the description of the eight qualities of liberated persons, which includes the Supreme Personality of Godhead, first and foremost, we have the description Satya Kama, which also comes in Vishnu Sahasranam. His desires are all of the truth. Satya Sankalpa, whatever he desires, whatever he decides to do must come true. So, there's a little introduction to the name Satyamedha, and now we can move into the commentators' explanations of these names. Parashara Bhatta, he says that Bhagavan is Satyamedha because he is sincere. He means what he says. In this world, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, people say one thing, but they mean something else. They have another intention in their heart. They speak not revealing what is in their heart. They speak in such a way to further their interests in the world, in a world which they perceive, to further my interests, I have to be cunning and not straightforward. Bhagavan is not like that. What he speaks is pure knowledge. Bhagavad Gita is so important. It's the words of the Supreme Personality of Godhead revealing the truth to a bewildered, ignorant Arjuna. And what he says is so valuable that it is, even now, thousands of years later, the standard guidebook for understanding the truth. What he says is true, it's clear, it's straightforward. What people in ignorance say is they may have other purposes in speaking. We hear Krishna several times in speaking to Arjuna. He says, I'm speaking for your benefit. Pravakshami anasuyave, and I'm speaking to you because you are not envious. Then you can accept it. You Because Arjuna accepted Krishna as being straightforward, therefore Krishna was willing to speak Bhagavad Gita to him. If we're envious of Krishna, then we can't understand what he says. There's a knowledge filter. We just can't get it. We can't get what Krishna says. We can't understand what Krishna says. He won't grant to us the intelligence to understand the truth, the satyamedha. He won't grant that to us if we are envious of Krishna. So Krishna, what he says, this has been discussed, this quality under Sumedha, because the names are very similar. Sumedha, of good intelligence, Satyamedha, of true intelligence. The way that Parashara Bhatta and Baladev Vidyabhushan explain this understanding of the name Satyamedha is straightforward, clear, honest, sincere, is that he considers his relationship with his devotees to be real. Just like the cowherd boys, Krishna is with, or the cowherd people of Vrindavan. Now Krishna is with them, and we might think, well, actually he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's much more than a cowherd boy. And there must be some kind of play or pretense, or as the Mayavadis say, that Ishvara doesn't really exist, but he takes some form. It's a very convoluted kind of idea the Mayavadis have. But we may think that Narayana, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that's his real position. He's in the spiritual world, lying on Ananta Shesha, and it's only some kind of play that he does, he has some purpose, whatever, killing demons. But Krishna himself, he informs the people of Vrindavan, don't think this is just some play. Both Parashara Bhatta and Baladev Vidyabhushan, they cite the instance where Krishna, after lifting Govardhan Hill, and all of the cowherd men, especially, they were thinking, well, who is this Krishna? He must be, is he God? Or he can't really be one of us. But Krishna told them, he was very straightforward, Please don't think of me as being something outside. I'm not an outsider. I'm not above you. I'm one of you. Really, I'm really, really, truthfully, I'm one of you. Yadi vosti mai priti slagyo ham bhavatam yadi tadatam buddhi sadrishi buddhir va kriyata mai. That's, and then another verse from the, two verses from Vishnu Purana. Naham devo na gandharvo na yaksho na chadanavaha ahamvo bandhavo jata na vaschintyam atonyata. He said, Krishna said to them, if you really have love for me, I know you really have love for me, and you want to praise me, then don't, please don't. They were saying, maybe he's a god from the heavens, maybe he's a Gandharva, maybe he's a Yaksha, maybe he's a Danava, he's super powerful. Please, Krishna begged the residents of Vrindavan, please don't think of me as something separate from you or above you or some imposition on you. Please accept me as one of you. I am one of you. I am one of you. Just accept me like this. And Krishna, when he says this, it's not false. Krishna's first identity is as the son of Nanda and Yashoda, the lover of Radha. Yes, Krishna, he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yes, that's true. But his first identity in his own mind is the son of Nanda and Yashoda and the lover of Radha. We're discussing Vishnu Sahasranama. So we, from our fallen position down here, we have to look up. Om Tad Vishno Paramam Padam Sada Pashyanti Suryoho. We have to look up to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the spiritual world. But he himself knows himself as a cowherd boy of Vrindavan. Baladev Vidyabhushan quotes from Bhagavatam, Krishna and Balaram speaking to Vasudev. No, who is that? Anukampya Prajahivaha. We, Krishna and Balaram, we are your sons. And we should be treated with kindness as such. Don't think of us as anything else. Parashar Bhatta, quoting Lord Rama, the son of Dasharath. Because people are trying to tell him he's God. And what does he say? People means demigods are telling him. Atmanam manusham manye ramam dasharathatmajam. Well, you might think like that, but as far as I'm concerned, I simply know that I consider myself similar. I'm a human, and I'm the son, I'm born of Dasharath. When we give our identity in Indian culture, changing now, so many aspects of Bharatiya Sanskriti, Vaidiki Sanskriti, the Vedic culture, so many aspects are becoming lost. But to give one's identity, one will give one's name and then his father's name. That's the first thing, to identify oneself. And then if more is needed, you can say from certain village and so on and so. But that's the first thing. This is my name and this is my father's name. So Ram thinks, I'm a human, I'm the son of Dasharath. So sincerity, what is this sincerity? We have the word in Gita, arjavam, straightforwardness. We have the term in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, of the description of pure devotional service. Anyabhilashita shunyam gyanakam adhyanavritam anukulyena krishnanushilanam bhaktirutama. Pure devotional service to Krishna is executed only for Krishna's pleasure, without any personal desire for material benefit or even for the spiritual benefit of becoming liberated from this world. Means Krishnarte Akila Cheshta, doing everything for Krishna, only for his pleasure. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentary on the Vyavasayatmika Buddhi verse in Gita, gave an understanding of this fixed one-pointed intelligence in a passage which very much affected our own Srila Prabhupada, which Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur stated that my only wish is to execute the order of my spiritual master. I have nothing to aspire for, either in this life or another life. Whether I'm liberated or whether I go to hell, it doesn't matter. Whether the material world exists or doesn't exist, my only motive is that I must obey the orders of my spiritual master. This very much affected our own Srila Prabhupada. Krishna is sincere also, but from the other side, he's very sincere in being the protector of his devotees. He's very sincere in loving his devotees in a non-condescending way. Here is a definition from Collins English Dictionary defining sincerity. Sincerity is the virtue of one who communicates and acts in accordance with the entirety of their feelings, beliefs, thoughts, and desires in a manner that is honest and genuine. So he doesn't have one, he doesn't have an inner hidden motive. It's described as a virtue. But even very unvirtuous people can be like that. This describes Krishna very well. He communicates and acts in accordance with the entirety of their feelings, beliefs, thoughts, and desires in a manner that is honest and genuine. So that describes Krishna, but that also describes Hitler. Really, let's read it again. Now, think about what Hitler stands for. It's not good. One who communicates and acts in accordance with the entirety of their feelings, beliefs, thoughts, and desires in a manner that is honest and genuine. So Hitler was honest and genuine about what he believed in. And he really gave himself fully to reifying that or actualizing it. But that kind, we don't call that sincere because it's not a virtue. It worked not to the betterment of the human race, but to the destruction of a significant portion of it. And even we have people who are very sincere about uplifting the human race, but they don't consider other species. And they may even consider other species, but they don't know how to benefit others because they think only in terms of benefit in terms of the mind and body. So really, sincerity can only be properly executed on the platform of satyamedha sumedha when one actually understands the facts and the reality. Otherwise, we get people very sincere, selfless, but not for all their sacrifices, for all their praise for it, they're not actually able to help anyone. And prime examples of that, of misplaced sincerity because of lacking satya medha, actual clear intelligence to understand the ultimate truth of Krishna. So prime examples we can give from recent history are Mahatma Gandhi and Mother Teresa, who were both, at least if we take the best descriptions of them, the common description of them, they were both very sincere, very principled, sacrificed their life for a higher cause, but ultimately they weren't able to benefit anyone because whoever they benefited in whatever way they thought they benefited them, they remained within the cycle of birth and death, suffering repeated birth and death in ignorance of Krishna. They were both ignorant of Krishna. And so for all their sincerity, if they were sincere, their sincerity is challenged by some. But for just taking it for the sake of argument that they were fully sincere, and definitely they were very, very dedicated to what they were doing, but they weren't able to benefit anyone. So really, not in the ultimate sense of the term. You might help someone and lift them out of poverty, but you can't help them to get free from their karmic reactions, which will come. To feed someone and clothe them, okay, that's all right, but you have to give them knowledge by which they can come out of the cycle of birth and death. Knowledge of Krishna. Otherwise, it's superficial help. So sincerity, satyamedha indicates sincerity, but sincerity in and of itself is not helpful and can be very harmful, as in the case of Hitler, if it's not on the platform of satyamedha, of understanding the absolute truth, personality of Godhead. Krishna is sincere. He genuinely wants our uplift. And he looks in us for sincerity. Do we actually want to serve him? Do we want to come to him? There are many people engaged in spiritual activities, no doubt. But they're not looking for Krishna. And therefore, for all their very painstaking activities, they don't make much progress. Krishna is looking for how much we're looking for him. Krishna says to Uddhava, na sadhayati mam yogo na sankhyam dharmam Uddhava na svadhyayas tapasyago yatha bhakti mamorjita. My dear Uddhava, the unalloyed devotional service rendered to me by my devotees brings me under their control. I cannot be thus controlled by those engaged in mystic yoga, Sankhya philosophy, pious work, Vedic study, austerity, or renunciation. These are all processes which are for spiritual uplift, but they're still avoiding Krishna. Krishna's looking for a little sincerity. If with a little sincerity we offer Krishna fruit, leaf, flower, or water, Krishna will very happily accept it. Krishna is much more happy with that than someone performing severe austerities and yoga practice over many, many lifetimes. Krishna looks for our sincerity. Krishna is sincere with us. He tells us directly what he wants. He's calling for us to love him. So why should we not be sincere with him? Sincerity from our side means freedom from crookedness. Ahaitukya prihati hata yayatma suprasediti. Serving Krishna without any pretensions, always, only for Krishna. Yayatma suprasediti. This will fully satisfy us. And Atma can also mean Krishna. So this fully satisfies Krishna. When we say Yayatma suprasediti, it can fully satisfy the self. Well, that means it fully satisfies Krishna. So Krishna is very pleased with that. He makes it known in Bhagavad Gita. And those who are sincere can understand Bhagavad Gita. And those who are not sincere will misunderstand it. Now, another angle on the name Satyamedha. Just another aspect of it. Shankaracharya says that he is of true knowledge. Whatever he says is the truth. The Vedas emanate from Narayana. So he is of true knowledge with foresight and intelligence. He has true knowledge. It's very, very hard to define what true knowledge is because we don't know what it is. What can we say is true knowledge? We don't know. He knows. This we accept. He knows. If we accept knowledge from him, we can also know. Very simple process. All this trying to find out philosophy, oh, trying to discover science, this, that. Simply, tad vijnanartham sagurum eva bhigacchit. Simply to find out what the truth is. the science of understanding the truth. Go to a guru. Guru explains. Why do we go to a guru? Because guru knows, because guru is in contact with Krishna. Guru has received the knowledge from his guru. It's passed down in disciplic guru-disciple relationship from Krishna, unchanged. Very simple thing. But it's very hard to define. It's very hard for us even to think what is true knowledge if we don't have it. But if we come in contact with devotees, just like Srila Prabhupada, he said, the truth, Krishna is the truth. Completely clear, convinced. That's it. Shankara gives this idea, and Radha Krishna Shastri develops that unfailing intelligence, satya avitata medha yasya iti satya medha ha. Unfailing intelligence. This is Shankara's commentary, and Radha Krishna Shastri, he develops this idea with the understanding that this satya medha, true intelligence or intelligence of the truth, means the ability to foresee things and to see the inner aspect of everything, to understand everything in its subtleties. So that all our work proceeds very well. Because we know everything, Krishna knows everything, then everything goes on. Just to give an example, a gross example. We have to use gross examples from this world. Now, we use a motor car. We drive it here and there. And it works. We put in petrol, or petrol, as it's called in India, or gasoline, or gas, as it's called in America. Anyway, put that in, if it's a petrol car. Nowadays there are diesel cars and electric cars. Anyway, put petrol in the car. You have to put water every so often, clean the windshield every so often, and go on driving. And it works fine. But we have to send it for servicing every so often, for oil change, general checkup, tightening things up. From time to time, the air filter needs cleaning. Now, we may not understand. These are the subtleties. As far as we're concerned, it just works. You get in the car, you push the button. It used to be that you turn the key. And then, you put in the gear if you're using a gear shift car, and then you start driving. But there are certain subtleties of how it works. If we don't understand it, we're going to get in trouble. Even if we don't fully understand it, we know, okay, so many miles, I have to take it for servicing. It's not just as straightforward as we see. There are so many subtleties in the way the universe is working. Krishna knows them all, and therefore he can keep everything in good order. Here's a definition of the word paravaragya. This is from Valmiki Ramayana. Paravaragya means aware of all superior and inferior existences. Aware of everything at the higher level, the lower level, and that means the intermediate level and the subtle level. So this word is used in this description of Lord Rama, and it's described in the commentary that it refers to a person who knows about the past, present and future is one aspect. Spirit and matter is another aspect. And Paramatma and Jivatma, this is another aspect. So this is a very good definition of knowledge and what we in Krishna consciousness, those of us who take the trouble to try and understand the teachings of the Vedas as we have received them in disciplic succession. This is a very good summary of what we need to know, or what we're aiming at understanding. The past, present, and future. Now, obviously, we can't understand everything in all detail, but we can understand the general scheme of things, just like in the Bhagavatam, in the third canto, I was just reading today. It's stated that the whole universal cycle goes on repeatedly, so that what was in the past will again be in the future. In the future will be the same kind of thing that happened in the past, because it's not exactly stated in the Bhagavatam, but not exactly these words, but there's constantly in this material existence, there's Srishti, Stiti, or Palan, and Pralaya, which means there is creation, and creation also includes, there is Sarga, Visarga, there's initial creation, and then subsequent creation, Atra Sarga, Visargascha. Then there is creation, then there is maintenance, and then there is destruction. So in this way we can know past, present, and future. We can know all this from Bhagavatam. The spirit and matter. What is the difference between spirit and matter? This basic point people don't know. And their whole platform of knowledge and their whole platform of existence is ignorance, because they don't know the difference between spirit and matter. And ultimately, and most importantly, the difference between and the relationship between Paramatma and Jivatma, the Supreme Lord and the Jivas. Okay, going on to another aspect of the name Satyamedha. He of true knowledge, another aspect of him being of true knowledge, he is of true knowledge of the Vedas and their numerous branches. Vedaischa sarvera ham eva vedyaha. Vedantakrit Vedavit Eva Chaham, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, I am the knower of all the Vedas. I made the Vedanta, which the Vedanta explains all the Vedas, all the rest of the Vedas. The Upanishads explain the rest of the Vedas. Vedantakrit Vedavit, he knows the Vedas. He is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And he knows the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. There are so many philosophers with so many interesting ideas, and mostly they all have some, whatever they say, at least sounds plausible to some extent. But they don't know the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Only Krishna knows. Or someone who learns from Krishna, they can know reality as it is, because all that he says is truth. His intelligence is satyamedha, clear, fixed. Whatever he says, he knows past, present, and future. Whatever he said was true, and it will always be true. That's why Bhagavad Gita is always relevant. It didn't become outdated because now we have atom bombs. I mean, atom bombs are also outdated. You see, everything gets outdated, but Bhagavad Gita doesn't. Here is an understanding of this name Satyamedha from Satyadeva Vashishta, who says that he, Bhagavan, has the unfailing knowledge that keeps all the multifarious creations right, going on correctly from the beginning to the end of a kalpa, or a cycle of time. So this Satyadeva Vashishta has given several similar understandings, which led me to discuss the mathematical God. because what he thinks is true, therefore he brings the material, he's able to bring the material world into existence. The material world is true. It's not, as Shankara says, that the Jagan Mithya, the Jagat, the material universe, is false. You couldn't even talk about it. There wouldn't be anything to discuss if it was absolutely false. But it's a manifestation of his thoughts, his dream. His dream works in a structured way. The dream of Mahavishnu is this material world. This is a most important point to understand, because we have this ongoing, never-ending discussion with the Advaitavadis, who say that the universe is not real. Nothing is real. They say even Advaitavada is not real. It's self-defeating, of course. But the words of the scripture, nothing is real. Everything in this, the only real is Brahman, which is, they say, it's just something to be realized. And who is it to be realized? And it's just, it doesn't make any sense. And they'll agree with that. But then, why discuss any philosophy? They say, I just saw today someone saying, Advaita is not a philosophy. And then why so many books of philosophy that Shankara and his followers wrote and they're writing up to the present time? The universe is real. This is a major contention or statement of fact of the Vaishnavas and others. They are the thoughts of God, his thoughts, whose intelligence is real. So it's an insult to the Supreme Personality of Godhead to say this world is not real, his intelligence produces unreality. Our thoughts give rise to illusion. His thoughts give rise to true, clear intelligence. He is true and real. His intelligence is true and real. If we align our intelligence with him, we will come to understand the truth about him and about everything else, because everything else is in relationship with him. And we will understand reality as it is. He is true. He is not an illusion. His intelligence is true. He does not play dice with the universe. He's not illusion. His beauty, his power, his love, his sweetness, his mercy, it's all true. And his intelligence is true also. Let us pray to him for the good intelligence to know him in truth. Yo mam eva samurha janati purushottamam. So sarvavid bhajati mam sarvabhavena bharata. Lord Krishna says that whoever knows these facts about me, that I am Purushottama, the whole subject or the main subject, the subject of the 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, whoever knows this without doubting knows everything. And knowing everything, he worships me. Of this there is no doubt. So our intelligence can become on the platform of truth if we simply accept Krishna is the truth. Hare Krishna. Vancha kalpa tarubhyascha kripa sindhubhyavacha Patita anam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Dante nidhaya chunakang padayoni patya kritva chakakushatameta dahambravimi. He sadhava sakala eva vihaya durat goranga chandra charne kurutanuraga. Parivadit Parivadatu jano yata tata va nanu mukaro navayang navichara yamaha hari rasa madira madati mata bhuvi vilutama natama nirvishama. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.